Well, as you might remember, Bethany was a little town about 2 miles from Jerusalem. And this is where Lazarus was recently raised from the tomb. This was a little get-together, a little dinner party, not far from Jerusalem. If we look back at the last passage, we can understand that there was some tension. And for about 3 months' time between what today we call Hanukkah and what is the Passover, Jesus, it says, did not walk openly among these leaders that were looking for him, because he got word about what it says in the last chapter, verse 53, that they made plans to put him to death. So you get this picture that they were looking for Jesus because they wanted to stop him and they wanted to stop people from following him. So he went farther away from Jerusalem. At this point, he comes back and he's 2 miles from Jerusalem back in Bethany. So there's some tension. But with the scene that we have, it's just a dinner party. It's just a get-together. He's there. It's friendly. It seems like it was just a nice gathering of friends and family there in Bethany. It was a happy time, a time to honor Jesus as a guest. And so they made supper for him. And it was a special get-together, not a big formal thing, not something where you would put on a black tie or get dressed up in your best. It was a get-together to honor Jesus. And it was more like what we would consider a casual get-together, where the basic elements were there of friends or family getting together, having food, and just spending time together. Now in verse 2, we see that Martha is there, Mary is there, Lazarus is there. What it says in verse 2 is that Martha served. And that's what Martha did. She was serving. She was on the kitchen committee. She was the kitchen committee. She was always serving, and that's a good thing, as long as her priorities are right. And so as we look at this, we see that there is just this normal get-together. People are sitting down, they're eating together, and it's a good, friendly time. Or is it? Is there more happening here? Is there something that's not so friendly? Well, it says that Lazarus was one of those reclining with him, that's Jesus, at table. And perhaps they looked at Lazarus and they said, you know what, Lazarus, instead of having a job this time, you've been through a lot lately. Why don't you just sit there? Just relax. In fact, a few verses later, we read that a lot of people were coming to believe in Jesus because of Lazarus. So you can imagine that certainly people from this area wanted to talk to him. I don't know how those conversations would go. We're one day, we who trust in Jesus, we're going to get to ask him. And we're going to say, you know, Lazarus, you died twice. I don't know what they were saying on this occasion and what they wanted to know from him. But, you know, in my mind, they walked up to him and say, so you're Lazarus? Yeah, I'm Lazarus. So you were dead? Yeah, I was dead. I don't know where the conversation went from there. But people were fascinated by Lazarus. And the fact that he was in the tomb and he was dead and then Jesus raised him was a phenomenal thing. And all of these people were looking and coming together and believing in Jesus because of what happened with him. So it was a special get-together, this get-together in Bethany. And Jesus was the guest of honor. And then we get to this part where the focus comes to what Mary does. Mary does something extravagant and spectacular. And I mean those words in the very best sense. Look at verse 3. Mary, therefore, took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. This was Mary, who was so tender, This was Mary who, with a heart that was just overflowing with love and adoration for Jesus, did something wonderful for him. She was adoring Jesus in this way. She poured it on his feet. This was a position of humility. You could take perfume and put it on someone. You would normally put it on their head or their neck, and it would smell great. This was an immense amount. This was 11 ounces of very expensive perfume. She poured it, though, on his feet. And that's where a servant deals. A servant would wash feet. A servant would not even be required to untie sandals from their master. But this Mary, who is so tender, comes to Jesus and she pours this incredibly expensive perfume, which people speculate, what was this for? This could have been their family savings. This could have been her retirement. This could have been something that was a part of their family's financial security and safety. It was very expensive, it says. And as we notice that, we should notice that what Mary did cost her something. It cost her something to do this. It was a type of worship. And she saw in Jesus something of such value that she took this and she said, I want to do this for him. You know, King David, whenever a plague was averted, he wanted to erect an altar and make a sacrifice to the Lord. And so he went and he wanted to buy the land where the angel of the Lord stopped this plague from spreading. And the man who owned the land said, you know what, you can just have it. And you can have my oxen and we can break up the wood here that we have for yokes. And we can sacrifice right here and you can just have it. It's yours. I'm giving it to you, King David. And King David said something there. He said, I will not sacrifice to the Lord an offering that costs me nothing. And Mary had that same heart of worship. I'm going to take something of value and I'm going to give it away. I'm going to pour it out for Jesus. And then it says that she wiped his feet with her hair. This is humility. She would have untied her hair and she would have been down on her knees with her hair, wiping his feet clean. Just humility and a heart that was pouring out love for Jesus with what she did. And it says that the perfume filled the house. This open service to Jesus became a blessing for everyone. It just filled the house with a perfume that you would only smell when someone was having a very special occasion. This was an extremely special occasion to Mary because Jesus was there. But the next verse, verse 4, starts with this word, but. This beautiful thing just happened. This woman with a heart that was so full it was overflowing in love for Jesus pours out this perfume. But, it says, Judas criticized her. Let's look at that. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, one of Jesus' disciples, he who was about to betray him said, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. J.C. Ryle says that a cold heart and a stingy hand will generally go together. Martha was serving. She was on her feet. She was always active. And Judas didn't criticize that. Lazarus was sitting at table with Jesus, and Judas didn't criticize that. But he levels a harsh and pointed criticism at Mary. Mary, who was so tender. Mary, who was so vulnerable at that moment, having done something extravagant. And maybe she wasn't even back on her feet. Maybe her hair wasn't tied up yet. He levels a harsh and pointed criticism, Judas. It was an evil, divisive question. You know, questions can do great damage. And the problem with questions is that you can make strong points with a question, And then you can easily back away from the question. You can back away from what you're really asserting with the form of a question. You can say, hey, I was just asking a question. Just asking a question. We've all heard that. But with this question, Judas was accusing Mary. He was saying, Mary, you did wrong with a valuable resource. You did something that wasn't necessary, Mary. Mary, you don't even care about the poor. All of that is in Judas's question. It was not an innocent question. It was an evil and divisive question. Such questions are designed to persuade people. Such questions cause division. And such questions invite people to see evil by looking at something that has happened through another person's specific and carefully selected lenses. And such questions can only tear down. You see, whenever you want for people to view something and come to a certain conclusion, if you want them to come to the conclusion that you want them to have, what you'll do is you'll frame the situation in a certain way. You'll say, these are the things that matter. And therefore, because these things matter, look at this. Either she cares about the poor or she doesn't. Either she's going to be responsible with this perfume or she will not. She doesn't care about the poor. This was a waste. And if you look at it through that lens, if you let Judas frame the argument, you will see it the way he sees it. You'll look at that, and maybe some people in this party were seeing it through his lens. Maybe some people were listening to this and saying, oh, wow. Yeah, we're supposed to care about the poor. I thought that's a big thing that we're about. And friends, if you don't know how to discern this, if you don't know how to spot logically that there's a false dichotomy being presented, then you could fall into this trap. You might see evil, even if it isn't there. Well, Jesus answers him on her behalf. Jesus looks at Judas and he says, it's very strong, actually, the beginning of his statement. He looks at her and he says, leave her alone. He cuts it off. The next words after Judas's accusation, he cuts her off and he says, you leave her alone. And I think that you can feel something of the anger of the Son, the wrath of God, which he saves us and his word is truth, but he was right there. And in the many times when God's people are maligned through history, he knows and he hears. And when he wants his truth to be spoken, it will be. But right there, Mary, who was so vulnerable, and she got attacked and accused and maligned. He was there and he said, you leave her alone. And he protected tender Mary. Now, we are meant with this passage to see a contrast between Mary and Judas. You know, I was asking myself and I was praying about this. Why did John include this in the gospel? In the book, it says at the end that Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may know, so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. And so with this tension that's rising, and Jesus is done with his public teaching, now the rest of what we're going to see is just him with his disciples. And for the next several chapters, it's going to be private conversations, and then it's his arrest. And for many chapters, it's this last week of his life before the crucifixion. Why does John put this in here? Why does God want us to see this little dinner party in Bethany? Right before Jesus does the triumphal entry, and he walks up this hill and over the hill of the Mount of Olives, and he walks in, I mean, he doesn't walk in, he rides in actually on a donkey, up the next hill, which is the city of Jerusalem. Why is this little dinner party in here? When all of this tension is rising and all these big things are happening, Well, to get to the answer, first we have to see what it's telling us, and that is that there's a contrast happening here. Mary and Judas are at very different places. Mary is adoring Jesus. Judas is tearing her down. He, Judas, gave the appearance of good motives, but he was driven by selfish ambition. Judas was ruled by a pattern that is just happening in this world. It was the same darkness leading him that was leading the leaders that were 2 miles away in Jerusalem. He was led in a path of darkness. She was adoring Jesus. She was walking in the light that she had seen and known. She was walking in the light more and more, serving, giving, loving her Savior. He was stumbling in darkness. Gene read from our passage, but inside the bulletin, you'll see it. It says, but the path of the righteous is a contrast in Proverbs 4. But the path of the righteous is like the light of dawn, which shines brighter and brighter until full day. The way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. And so we're given this paradigm. There's a way that's marked by walking in the light, and there's a way that's marked by darkness. So she was walking in the light, he was stumbling in darkness, and he was on his way to his own destruction. In fact, it says, and we're told to think ahead in this, where in verse 4 it says, he who was about to betray Jesus. So we need to look at these two. We need to see Judas. And we need to look at him and we need to tremble in fear at the condition of a man made in God's image who is walking in darkness, who is stumbling and not knowing over what he stumbles. We need to stand in fear and say, there but for the grace of God go every one of us. It says he was one of the 12. Back in chapter 6, Jesus said, yet one of you is a devil. And you could be very close to Jesus and spend all your time among his people, or even be working for him and still be walking in the path of wickedness. Of Judas, it says here that he was a thief. And the heart of his motivation here, how he was walking in darkness, was he had a love for money. And that's a great sin. And in fact, that's a sin, that's a condition of the heart that leads us into many sins. He was a thief. This is the only time in the Bible where he is called a thief. It says that he used to steal from the money bag that he kept. He loved money. The Bible says that those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. You know, we're told a lot of things about money. Jesus preached so much about money, about treasures. We're told to keep our lives free from the love of money and to be content with what we have because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. We should see Judas and his love for money, which guided him, which in just a few days would lead him to sell Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. And we should stand in fear and we should ask ourselves, and I should ask you, do you love money? I've never met a person, I've never met a Christian that has told me, yes, I love money. I have never met someone that has come to me and said, I have a problem, and I think the root of it is that I love money. This is a sin that hides. It hides in us. And if you think that there is none of this in you, I can tell you, probably you'll think, I know people that do love money. I know people that make a lot more than me, and they are driven in their life by avarice. So how do you know? How do you know if you love money? Well, like I said, no one thinks that they are loving money. I mean, no one naturally thinks that. Nobody seeks help for avarice. But I want to point you to two things to just think about. Do you seek security through money? Is money a retirement account, a bank account? Is it your security? Is it your sense of stability? If it is, that's a sign. Is it your significance? Do you think about what you have as being an indication of the value of who you are, either to yourself or to other people? And another way to put that is, people that have less, do you think in any way that they are inferior to you? If so, then I think that this love of money is still present in our hearts. I commend to you some things that Tim Keller has written and preached about with this, very good sermons. In his book, Counterfeit Gods, you can read about it. And then there are some sermons about treasures. If you look up Tim Keller Treasures, you'll find some sermons about this, and I'd recommend that to you. But we should see Judas and his love for money, which drove him. And I think that he was just thinking logically. He was just thinking, there are things that are just irresponsible, and doing this with this perfume is irresponsible. So we should see this, and we should see Judas, and we should tremble in fear. And we should see Mary, and we should stand in awe. We should look at her and say, wow, look at the freedom that she had. Look at the beautiful thing that she did. This woman that took this treasure, and she used it for Jesus. And I think that Mary knew exactly what she was doing. I don't think that she was being irresponsible in any way. I think she was being extravagant, and that's a good thing. And I think that when Jesus says, and you can see in your footnote, the way that I think to read this to make sense is that he was saying, leave her alone so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. Jesus said, she has kept it. The footnote says it this way. She has kept this for the day of my burial. I think that she knew something of Jesus' coming death, and she just believed it. He had been telling them that he was going to go to Jerusalem, and he's going to be put to death. And I think that in some way she grasped this. But even if she didn't, Mary looked at Jesus, and he saw him of such worth, such a value, that she wanted to do something for him. I think that she could look at her brother Lazarus and say, look at what Jesus can do, and look at who he is. And instead of loving and holding on to this treasure that she had, she could just let it go because she saw in Jesus a greater treasure. And she saw in him, I don't need significance from this because he loves me. He loves Lazarus. We went to him and said, the one that you love is sick. And he came and he raised him. My significance is in him, and that won't go away. And you know what? My security is from him. He is more powerful than death. I don't have to worry about what will happen to me in my old age. I don't have to worry about hoarding my treasures. I can be generous, and I want to be generous with him. So Mary loved Jesus, and we should look at this, and we should stand in awe. You know, doesn't your heart just look at Mary and say, I want to live like that. I don't want to be anxious about what tomorrow will bring. I don't want to store up treasures in this world. I want to be free from that the way Mary is. She had a better security now. She had a better, strong tower. And to him, to Jesus, she fled. You know, and it says in 1 John 4:19, it says that we love because he first loved us. That God's love, it is poured into our hearts and it pours out of our hearts. That we love like Mary is doing here. We end up becoming generous the way God is generous. We end up becoming spectacular worshipers because we see him and we receive the love that he's given us. It's an incredible thing. and we find in him a better significance. And we find glory in a different place, in laying down our lives, in sacrificing our treasures, in living for something that's way beyond the things of this world. So we should see Judas and we should tremble in fear, and we should see Mary and we should stand in awe and say, wow, now that's living. And we should notice the tension between the two of them. I want you to notice the hostility that there is, because Judas raises this evil question. Notice the enmity between them. You know, back in the garden, God said with the serpent and with Eve that there would be enmity between her offspring and the offspring of Satan. And that there would be righteous and there would be wicked, and there would be tension and there would be enmity. And that they would not get along. Notice how you see it here. Mary is persecuted. She was reviled by Judas. Imagine, you have to imagine, this was not easy for Mary to hear. She's being slandered on the spot, face to face, in front of all these people that she cares about, by a disciple, by an apostle of Jesus. Think about that. Think of how that must have terrified her. I wonder if she questioned herself. Did she fear that she had done something wrong? Did others look at her while he spoke? And did she notice their glances? Did she look at those guests? Did she want to defend herself? Was she about to say, no, I care about the poor. I really do care about the poor. But Judas was speaking evil of Mary with his question. And here we see this hostility, this enmity. It was an attack. Friends, this same kind of attack will happen to you if you serve and worship Jesus. He said, "Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." Think about Lazarus. What did Lazarus do to deserve death? He was loved by Jesus. He was saved from death by Jesus. And he's eating at a table with Jesus. What did he do wrong? And yet the authorities find out that he is leading people to Jesus by just being alive, by being loved by Jesus. And they want to kill him. They just decide it's better if we get rid of them both. You see, this is what we get, and this is what we need to see here. This same struggle is happening throughout history between the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent, between light and darkness. And you know, just this week, look at the things that happen around us. Look at the shooting that happened at the Jewish synagogue over in Pittsburgh. Can you tell me that's not evil? I'm not going to say the details of this here, but did you read the article this week about these middle school girls that got caught down in Florida and what they were going to do? I'll just say this. They said with their own words that they were Satanists, and the repulsive and horrific things that they planned and wrote out on paper, people were talking about these things, and they're saying, why is this happening? How could someone do this in Squirrel Hill? How could someone do this in a middle school? These are just 11-year-old girls. And no one is saying, look, they said they're Satanists. They've been brought in to follow Satan. And people are saying, how could this come into the minds of a girl, of a preteen girl, to do a horrific thing that they were planning to do and to bring these weapons into school to do it? This is what we need to see. It wasn't just the leaders in Jerusalem against Jesus. there at this dinner party in Bethany, represented in Lazarus, was a struggle between evil and good. And there is a dominion of darkness that is in this world. And we need to recognize that it's there. And we should not fool ourselves into thinking that this world is a safe place or that we can make it a safe place free from that darkness. I mean, Jesus said to his disciples, if they hated me, they will hate you too. Jesus protects Mary, though. Here, he stands up, he says, you leave her alone. And he starts with a rebuke, and then he explains to everyone that's around what's happening. This is a good thing. He exposes the falsehood of Judas's framing of an argument. He says, you know what, the poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. Now, we don't get to see the look on Judas's face when Jesus rebuked him, when he put him in check. But we do know that only a few days later, Judas would betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. He was walking in a way of darkness. We know from this text, and we're pointed forward to it, that he will betray Jesus with a kiss. And we know, looking back, that Judas wouldn't come to realize this evil path until after he had betrayed Jesus. Proverbs 4, the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. This is the saddest part about this. Judas was looking at the bottom line. Judas was saying, hey, I'm the accountant here, and that's a waste. And in his heart was greed that was guiding him in darkness. J.C. Ryle says, we must pity the blindness of our unkind critics. And we must work on when we're criticized. You know, Aaron, when we were in worship, he read from Ephesians 2. And I want to read that as well. I'm going to read the few verses leading up to what Aaron read. This is what it says, okay? And we need to see this big picture of evil in this world, darkness, and the rescue from that darkness. This is what it says. And you were dead in your trespasses and sins in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air. Did you hear that? In which you once walked. You see, that path of darkness, we all lived on that path. That was all we saw. That was all we knew. Listen to this again. In which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived, in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, like the rest of mankind. And in contrast to our little narrative, where Mary does a beautiful thing, but Judas did this, Jesus rebuked her. This is what God does for us. When we were in the same path as Judas. But God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved. You see the contrast in this passage? It points us to something that's happening all around us. And people that claim to be followers of Christ, people that can be in the church can do just what Judas did. You know, you don't have to be, in our context, you don't have to be someone out there that's an atheist at a university criticizing and attacking Christians. That's not necessary to walk in darkness. If you don't know the Son the way Mary knows the Son, and if your heart hasn't been set free to love because you've been loved like Mary was loved, then there's still darkness. And so in the end, what we have is really just two realities. There's Judas and there's Mary. And we have to see that there is an orchestration of evil at work in this world. It is at work through those who openly oppose Jesus. whether they do it on a big, open, hostile level like the chief priests who were planning to kill both Jesus and Lazarus, who have atheist societies in our day, who go and protest Christians, who do awful things in this world. That is an orchestration of evil in this world. Or it might be through those who work among disciples, who are found at dinners held in Jesus' honor. So we should see Judas and we should see Mary. And when we see Judas, we should be warned. Judas, you know, he was awakened. There was a point late in his life. Jesus said about him, it would be better for him if he was never born. But do you know that he, about a week later, would die at his own hands? Because you know what? After walking in this path of darkness, after kissing the Son and betraying him for 30 pieces of silver, he realized what he had done. And that's when the curtain was pulled back for Judas, and it was too late. And he had betrayed the Son of Man. Friends, here's something that we need to realize. Every person we know starts like Judas. All of us included. We started like Judas. Maybe we're still walking in that path. But it's only by the grace of the Son, it's only by the grace of God that we are set free from that. And every person we know will either be awakened to the reality of who he is and this right and wrong, either in this world or in hell. There is a severe contrast here. And there are only two realities that face us. Either by seeing the Son and finding in him the love that he is holding out to us in the gospel, or by continuing to walk in the way of this world and being influenced for evil and through selfish desires, which to us just makes sense. There is heaven and there is hell. That's it. And so finally, with this passage, we are pointed forward to Jesus' death. And he says about Mary and what she has done, she saved this to anoint my body for the day of preparation for burial. He was going to that cross and he was going to die. And that's what we see here. There's a preacher in Scotland named William Still who wrote about this. And he said that the parable, the riddle that Samson speaks about the lion that dies could be spoken about Jesus here. He says, Samson, out of the strong comes something sweet. At this little dinner party is a foreshadowing of Jesus' death. She anointed his feet, wiped them off, and the smell just filled the house. And the point is that he's about to die. And Jesus says so. He would die, the strong would die on the cross. And from his death would come sweetness. From his death would flow life, healing, goodness, rescue from death, from sin, from this pattern of darkness, which will only lead to destruction. So the big question for you is this. Looking at Mary and Judas, are you set free? Are you set free by the Son who was anointed by Jesus? Are you set free by him? And do you see in him one of greater value than anything in this world? That's what it means to believe in him, to be rescued by him. That's part of the picture. Or are you still following the course of this world? So that's the big question for us. That's what we're intended to see in this, the contrast of only two realities. So this is just a day in Bethany, just a little get-together. Mary is loving Jesus, the path of the righteous shining brighter and brighter. Judas is angry. He accuses Mary. He wasn't getting what he wanted. He didn't like what she had done with something so valuable. And the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. It's just another day in Bethany, just another get-together. We're continuing on. It's another Sunday in our lives. Let's pray.